We're going to think this morning about Abraham and the life of faith from these eight verses. It is, in some ways, increasingly difficult to live a life of faith. There is a sense in which, as Christians or as people of faith, there is a kind of a marginalization or a growing sense of opposition, certainly from some quarters. But perhaps the most disconcerting thing of all is not the direct sense of antipathy towards faith when we come across that, but the sense that people have almost seemingly successfully removed God from our world. Of course, that isn't the case in many parts of the world today. If we were to take a look at what God is doing in Southeast Asia or in Africa or in Latin America, we would see astonishing things in terms of the gospel going forward and people responding. But here, we live in a place that sometimes people call disenchanted. They say that God has been removed from the public sphere. He's being removed from institutions, from schools, from all kinds of aspects of life, where once he was so clearly present, and that public sense of presence and acknowledgement made it in some ways more straightforward to be able individually and corporately, I think, to live a life of faith. It can be more challenging now. It can be lonelier now. And Abraham, I think, in these verses, gives us a really clear and wonderful illustration of what it means to live a life of faith. He and Sarah, who are really referenced together in these verses. I've called this morning's sermon Affirmation and Inspiration. My prayer is that as we think about Abraham and just four things about him, that our own faith this morning will be affirmed, that there'll be a sense in which the journey that we're on will somehow seem to be connected with Abraham's, and we'll feel good about that to the honor of God, not because of ourselves, but also that we'll be inspired, because Abraham and Sarah, although they made mistakes and did some things that were wrong, would have known themselves to be broken people, nonetheless, are incredibly inspiring. And my prayer is that we'll be affirmed by them, but also that we'll be inspired. So just four things to reflect on together this morning from these verses. And the first one is in verse 8, and I'm calling it Faith's First Step. Faith's First Step. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. He went out not knowing where he was going. The first thing that we see so clearly here is that Abraham's faith journey, the life of faith for Abraham, began by God's initiative. Sometimes when we think about the Christian life, we feel that we're pursuing God. We feel that the initiative and the momentum is with us. But behind the scenes, it is only ever possible for us to be on the Christian journey because God has taken the initiative. And it's wonderful to see that here. It is God from beginning to end, which is incredibly comforting. But God calls Abraham, and it is out of that call that Abraham is on the road and is able to begin the journey. I don't want to say too much about this morning, but when Stephen in Acts speaks about Abraham, he says that Abraham saw something of the glory of God when he was in Mesopotamia. The writer to the Hebrews and Abraham himself and Stephen don't tell us exactly what it means that God called Abraham. But what we do know is that God revealed himself to Abraham so that Abraham caught a glimpse of the glory of God. And having caught a glimpse of the glory of God, he pursued that God. He followed after that God. And so we have God calling Abraham. God, the communicator, speaking. God revealing his glory and inviting Abraham, enabling Abraham to come out of the darkness of his life and into the light of the glory of God. I just want us to see as well, though, quickly in this first step, that God called Abraham, but Abraham obeyed. Abraham understood in the voice of God and in the glory of God something that was greater than the authorities that were shaping his life in Mesopotamia. Whatever voices were speaking to him in Mesopotamia, whether they were cultural voices or philosophical voices or family voices or personality voices, whatever all those voices were, however authoritative they were or however compelling they were, in God, when God revealed himself, when God called him, he saw something more compelling and more demanding than all of those voices, and therefore he obeyed and went in the direction that God was calling him in. And very interestingly, without putting too much of a fine point on it, the verse tells us, verse 8 tells us, he went out not knowing where he was going. Now, for some people, that might suggest a great sense of adventure. For me, I'm more of a hobbit and not that into adventures. But clearly, the point that the writer is making is that the vision of God was so great, there was such a sense of assurance, even if there was a struggle, but there was such a sense of being compelled by God that Abraham went out even though he didn't know where he was going. And so I want to kind of bring that together for us this morning as we think about what it means to be called by Jesus. Those of us who are followers of Jesus have been called by him, haven't we? We've had the big call to our lives, the call of repentance and faith, to turn to him from ourselves, to confess our sin, to believe in him, to receive forgiveness, and to follow in his footsteps, as he says in the way that he said to the first disciples, "Come, follow me." So Jesus calls us in that initial calling, in that huge calling, in that fundamental calling, but he calls us also in the course of our everyday lives to live out what it means to be followers of him, in our relationships, in relation to where we live, in the things we say, in the things we do, in what we think, in everything that we're busy with. The call of God through Jesus, by the Holy Spirit and in God's word, is coming to us again and again. And it is those who hear the call of God and who respond to that call who know something not just of struggle, but of the vitality of the Christian life. I'm sure that this is one of the aspects of the Christian life that gives it its dynamism, that relationship with God whereby we hear him speaking to us day by day through his word, by his spirit. And as he speaks to us, we respond. And so that creates a living relationship. It creates momentum and direction, even though we don't quite know where it's going to take us at the end of the day. But we're listening to God and we're responding to God in all that that means. So in Abraham's life here, the first step is initiated by God, and we see Abraham responding. The second step that I'd like to, or the second element of Abraham's life that I'd like us to think about, is faith's final goal. So we've had faith's first step, and now we're going to think about faith's final goal in verses 9 and 10. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Jacob and Isaac, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to a city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. So Abraham is following God. It's not just a journey of faith, it's a physical journey. And Abraham journeys up out of Mesopotamia and eventually arrives in the promised land. And these verses are really extraordinary, because they give us such a strange contrast. Abraham has seen something of the glory of God that compels him to leave Mesopotamia, and he moves to what here is described as the promised land, the land that God was going to give him for his inheritance. You see, this is the place that he's been moved to. This is the place that's being given to him. This is what God has for him. But we read that he lives in that land, verse 9, like a stranger. in a foreign country, that he lives in a tent. So did Isaac and Jacob in the next generations, who were heirs with him of the same promise. I think it's an extraordinary thing that they didn't live in the promised land as if that was going to be the end of the journey. In some senses, temporarily speaking, it was. And so it was right for them to move from Mesopotamia to there. But while they were there, they lived in tents as in a foreign land. And of course this has to do not with the fact that the promised land wasn't enough for them, not with the fact that the promised land was disappointing or that God hadn't provided sufficient for them to satisfy them and give them a good living, but it has to do with the fact that Abraham had been given a vision of God which was beyond the bounds of this earth. It was beyond anything that this world could give him. And therefore, even though he moved to the promised land, he lived in tents. He lived as a stranger in a foreign country because, verse 10 tells us, he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. So the first step of faith is responding to God's call as he takes the initiative in our lives. That big initiative to bring us to faith in Jesus and all the daily, the little initiatives that he gives us when he speaks to us. But the second big picture here is faith's final goal. We can only live as pilgrims, we can only live as followers of Jesus if we live with a sense of the temporariness of this world. And we can only live with a sense of the fleeting nature of our lives and our world if we have that big vision of the city of God, the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. He was looking forward. And it's amazing how people are looking forward to Christmas already, isn't it? Our TV was on this week, and I think Philip Schofield was on the screen. I don't know which channel it was. I'm not quite sure what program it was. But Philip Schofield was saying really wonderfully to all of us, you don't need to worry about the Christmas presents this year, what to buy or how to make a choice. He was going to tell us exactly what all the options were and how to make the best possible choices so that we could have a perfect Christmas. The sense of anticipation for Christmas is incredible, isn't it? And because we're looking forward to the 25th, we do so many things now to be able to be ready then. I don't know whether you did any Advent decorations yesterday. We did in our house already. So we've already begun to kind of shape our lives and our home to the fact that Christmas is coming. And it's the same here with Abraham. He lives his life with a sense of being loose from this world because he's looking forward in a tangible and real way to a city with foundations whose builder and architect is God. He's looking forward. And I think one of the things that I find really challenging is that because we live in a kind of materialistic and consumer-driven environment, it can be so hard to be looking forward and for that forward-looking dimension of our lives to actually touch the here and now. Do you see what I'm saying? I'm laboring that point. But we live as if we're not living in tents. We live as if we live in wonderful houses, and we do, and in tower blocks that are here for eternity. But of course that isn't the case, and Abraham understood that. He understood that not because of the brokenness of the world, although that would have contributed to him to that. He understood the temporary nature of the promised land because he had a vision of God and the eternal nature of God. So the second step is that long-term vision, and out of that long-term vision, being able to live, as it were, loose from our lives, loose from material possessions, loose from what it means to be part of this world in the here and now, looking forward to that city whose builder and architect is God. The third element that I'd like us to think about with Abraham, Abraham's faith, and Sarah comes into it particularly here, is faith's lasting fruit. So we've had faith's first steps, faith's final goal, and now we have faith's lasting fruit. Verses 11 and 12. Let me just read those again. By faith, Abraham, even though he was past age and Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. I guess one of the things that happens when you live in an environment where fewer and fewer people want to journey along the pathway of faith like Abraham and Sarah did, and like many of us are seeking to do by God's grace, one of the challenges is that people might say to you that it's a waste of time. Why would you invest in an eternal city that you can't see and you can't really even prove exists? Why would you live in a tent here when you could actually build a proper house? Why would you sit loose to things in this world the way that Abraham and Sarah did and keep looking forward? It's a waste of time. It's a waste of energy. It's a waste of talent. It's something that we hear a lot. I mean, I'm only really new to the student ministry, but again and again, when young people come to apply to be staff workers or to do our voluntary program, Relay, it's called, parents who aren't Christians say, why would you do that? You're wasting your life. That's one of the big concerns about the journey of faith, that it's a waste of time, that there is no lasting fruit. But here we see the exact opposite of that. In fact, I was reading a commentary earlier, and someone said that there is perhaps no one else recorded in Scripture, except, of course, Jesus himself, and perhaps the Apostle Paul, who had such an immense influence on those around him and on those who came after him. Abraham's life and Sarah's life have been astonishingly and, in fact, miraculously fruitful. And we see that here because the writer tells us that out of this one man, verse 12, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. We aren't able to figure out God's economy, but Abraham responded to God's call. Abraham kept his eye on the ultimate goal. And even though people around him may have been mystified by that and may have thought it was a waste of time and a waste of life, God, through Abraham and Sarah, was able to bring about purposes that far exceeded anything that Abraham and Sarah or the people around them could ever have imagined. And isn't that the case with our lives as well? Who knows what God is doing with our lives? Who knows what God is doing with your life? It may not seem like much to you, but created in God's image, called to know Jesus and serving him, the fruitfulness that God can bring through you as you listen to him and as you respond and obey and as you go in the direction that he has for you is really staggering. There sprang from one so many as the stars of heaven in multitude, says another translation, and as the sand which is by the seashore, innumerable. And just have a quick look with me at what the writer tells us the secret was here of this fruitfulness. He says in verse 11, towards the end of verse 11, that Abraham and Sarah considered him faithful who had made the promise. Yeah, they kept looking to God. God had spoken, God had given his word, God had made promises, and they believed that those promises were being made by someone who could be relied on. And because they believed those promises were being made by someone who could be relied on, they held to those promises, even in the face of evidence that seemed to point in the other direction, which is why the writer says here that Abraham was past age, that Sarah herself was barren, and later he says about Abraham that he was as good as dead. All those things seemed to suggest that what God has promised, he wouldn't be able to deliver on. And therefore, those things seemed to suggest that God in his character wasn't a reliable God, and therefore one should abandon his promises. But Abraham and Sarah considered him faithful, and therefore in spite of the all too real difficulties and the long delay in fulfillment, they continued to believe and carried on in the direction that God had for them, and God brought about great fruitfulness in and through their lives. And then finally, we're going to finish with this fourth point, faith's worthy finish. Faith's worthy finish, verses 13 to 16. I just want us to see here that although Abraham and Sarah, verse 13, did not receive the things promised, and I think that's a striking phrase. I won't go into it in detail this morning. You'll notice that in Hebrews 11 that it sometimes says they did receive what was promised. But it also says here that they did not receive what was promised in this life, which is an extraordinary thing, isn't it? I think my feeling is that the evangelical movement in the West seems to suggest that you can have everything now from God, but it's really clear that you probably won't. I mean, there may be some people to whom God gives more than he gives to others. We have Jesus, and in him have everything, but everything that is available in him doesn't necessarily come to us now. We will find that ultimate fulfillment when we see him face to face. Here, they did not receive the things that had promised, perhaps suggesting the level of difficulty that their life of faith was to them as they journeyed on, as they believed, as they followed in the direction God had for them. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. But, and this is the clue here, they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. And the writer to the Hebrews seems to be suggesting here, not just that if you say you're a Christian, that means that you are, that authenticates your faith. But what he's saying here is that people who are genuinely compelled by God, who have genuinely seen something of the reality of Jesus and know what it means to be forgiven and to be accepted into God's family, people who have that will continue throughout their lives, through the ups and downs, like Sarah and Abraham experienced, through the ups and downs, they will continue to give expression through their words and through their lifestyle that they are on the pathway, that they are in the footsteps of Jesus. So there's a very real sense here in which they demonstrate, their words and their behavior demonstrate a consistency with the calling that God has issued to them. And we get that with Abraham when he's with the Hittites in Genesis chapter 23. He says to them, "I am a foreigner and a stranger among you." So he self-identifies as a stranger because God had called him out from the people of Mesopotamia and had started him on this journey, which would find its fulfillment in the new heavens and the new earth. And also Abraham and Sarah, I think particularly powerfully perhaps, never went back to Mesopotamia. They could have done. They weren't thrown out of Mesopotamia. They continued on the journey that God had for them. So their words and their behavior contributed to a kind of authentication of their faith. It helped people to see that they were serving the living God. Notice as we finish, the kind of wonderful conclusion to these verses. So here we have Abraham, who, called by God, takes that first step. Here we have Abraham, who keeps his eye on the final goal. Here we have Abraham, although struggling, continuing to believe that God is faithful and therefore ultimately being seen to be incredibly fruitful. And here we have Abraham finishing well. And look what happens. Look what God says about Abraham and Sarah and others in verse 16. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. I think this is amazing, isn't it? If you could paraphrase this, you could almost sense that someone might come to God and say, "Who are you?" And God would say, "Go talk to Abraham, because I'm Abraham's God. If you want to know me, look at Abraham." And ultimately, of course, that's true in Jesus. But it's incredible to think that God would be pleased to be called our God. I mean, I'm a bit of a pessimist in many ways, and I see my life as in a mess most of the time, and I can't imagine that God would ever point to me and say to anybody in the world, if you want to know what I'm like, go and chat to them, because I'm that person's God. I want to be known by his name. I am the God of Abraham. I'm the God of Isaac. I'm the God of Jacob. I'm the God of John Mark. I'm the God of whoever. You see, it's an incredible statement that God makes. He identifies himself with us and says, I am not ashamed to be called your God. Abraham and Sarah's life was marked by so much struggle, and we even see sinfulness in their journey. But God is able to say about them, because he started this work, he is able to say as he brings them through, I am not ashamed to be called their God. So this wonderful comfort as we go out into this week, that God, our God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, is not ashamed to be called your God if you are a follower of Jesus, if you're on the journey of faith. But also, God is aware of the cost. He's aware, perhaps, of the isolation and of the marginalization, and so he identifies with his people, but he is also aware of the cost, and he has prepared a city for them. Of course, he's aware of the cost. The journey was incredibly costly for Abraham and Sarah, and they went through immense struggles, like many of you, I'm sure, do from time to time, or maybe throughout the whole course of your life, marked by struggle and pain. But God is aware of that too. He not only identifies with them and comes alongside them with a sense of embrace, but he has also prepared a city for them. This God who gave up his own son understands the cost of salvation, understands the cost of the journey of faith, and he has prepared a city for them. Our children are a little bit older now, so I don't know how excited they are about Christmas. But my wife is a never stopping preparer of good things for the children. Okay? She isn't able to prepare a city for them when they come home this Christmas, but she's preparing some phenomenal stuff for them, gifts and food and decorations and wonderful stuff. She's preparing it for them because she loves them, she's welcoming them home and so on. And here we have a reflection of that from God himself. He calls us onto this journey, and it's a glorious journey, compelled by the vision of the glory of God, leaving Mesopotamia, those first steps, but keeping it temporary in this world because our vision is on the ultimate. Even though our lives look like they might be fruitless, believing, considering him faithful who promised, so that one day the real fruit will be visible, and being faithful to the end, finishing well, that God who enables us in that is saying to us, you cannot imagine what I have in store for you. I am preparing a city for you. So maybe God can affirm us this morning and inspire us by Abraham and Sarah's faith